This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Is it fair for colleges to consider race during the admissions process at school where Black, Latinx, and Native students are underrepresented? A federal court trial has begun this week in Winston-Salem to argue both sides of that debate. Students for Fair Admissions Incorporated is an advocacy group that believes that UNC Chapel Hill's admissions policies discriminate against white and Asian students. UNC Chapel Hill does consider race in admissions, but the university argues that it does so legally. Liz Schlemmer is covering the trial for WUNC. She's our education reporter and joins us now. Liz, welcome back.
Hi, Frank. Glad to be here.
This lawsuit is new to trial, but it has been in the works for quite some time. Walk us through the history of this case.
Right. Way back in November of 2014, Students for Fair Admissions filed this lawsuit against UNC, and they had filed other suits against Harvard and University of Texas Austin before that. In summer of 2016, the Supreme Court had a big decision, ruled in the case against University of Texas Austin, sided with the university. That'll be important later. For several years, this case against UNC was in the discovery phase. Both sides wanted it decided without a trial, but the judge decided on having a trial. It was originally set for May of this year, and because of the coronavirus, it was delayed until now.
Well, as you suggest, the issue has been in the courts for quite a while, and there is some Supreme Court guidance now on affirmative action. And the issue here is whether the university does or does not adhere to that guidance. So let's look at some of the parameters set by the court. What are they?
Well, in Fisher v. Texas, the case at University of Texas Austin, the Supreme Court ruled 4-3 that affirmative action is constitutional, but that the practices have to be precisely tailored to serve a compelling government interest. So what that means in the case of affirmative action is that universities have to show that their race-conscious admissions practices are necessary to achieve diversity on the campus, that that diversity is beneficial to students, that the university uses or considered methods that don't use race as a factor, and that those other methods were not sufficient to create a diverse class.
All right. So now let's talk a little bit about the plaintiff in this case, Students for Fair Admissions Incorporated, or SFFA. Who are they, and what's their history with this litigation?
So they're an advocacy group. They were created by a guy named Edward Bloom. He's a legal strategist, not a lawyer, but he connects potential plaintiffs to lawyers. And the group he founded is, according to their own website, committed to supporting lawsuits with the ultimate goal that race and ethnicity would no longer be considered as factors in admission, especially to selective colleges. So, again, I got that from their website, and their website seeks out people who are opposed to affirmative action, especially students or applicants who feel that they were rejected from admission to a college based on their race, namely white and Asian American applicants who feel that they were disadvantaged and rejected, you know, in favor of affirmative action for Blacks and Hispanic students.
All right. So we've set up the debate here, and we've set up the legal case. We've got a group that believes that affirmative action should not be legal at all, a Supreme Court that says it is, but only under these specific conditions. So now, how does the admissions process at UNC work, and how much does race factor into the process?
So those are really central questions to this case. I can't give you a definitive answer on those, but I can share some things that we know that are going to be talked about in this case. So UNC Chapel Hill gets applications from all around the state, all around the country, and the university is also required to admit a certain percentage of in-state students. So admission is even more competitive for out-of-state students. In the admissions department, there are admissions officers who are readers. They read through and consider each application, and they know certain things about each student. They know quantifiable things like a student's GPA and their class rank and their ACT or SAT scores. They also know demographic information like the student's race, ethnicity, gender, their first generation status, whether or not their parents also attended college, their location, whether they applied for a fee waiver. So that's a proxy for their income, if they're lower income and they didn't have to pay that. And for out-of students, they can also consider a legacy status. Then there are, you know, specifics to the student, like essays and recommendations. They might have an interview. The reader then looks through all of this, recommends to admit or deny. The student's wait listed, they might get a second reader, and they get scored by these admissions officers in different categories, like the academic rigor of their high school experience, their extracurriculars, and their personal qualities, which is a little bit squishier. And UNC Chapel Hill says it considers race as just a limited factor among all of these other things, that it looks at students holistically, that they don't use racial quotas. And the witness for Students for Fair Admissions argues that the statistics bear out that Black and Hispanic applicants generally rank lower for those quantifiable categories and higher in the more subjective personal category, like their personality, and that they're admitted at higher rates relative to white and Asian students with similar academic qualifications. So they're saying that at least the statistics show there might be some sort of racial preference.
All right, so we're going to get into an argument then in the court over what those statistics show and whether or not they demonstrate an unbalanced or an unfair use of race. But then there's this other marker, this other parameter that the courts have set. Is there a compelling government interest? In other words, is it beneficial to the community to have any kind of racial consideration? So what is UNC Chapel Hill's position on why race admissions matter at all?
Well, they say they're committed to educating a diverse community, and that diversity and inclusion especially make for a better educational environment for all their students, because their students can learn from each other and learn from each other's perspectives, and that will prepare them better for the future and for being part of a diverse workforce. And they also say that they already use, or they have already considered, other race-neutral methods, but that considering race to some extent is the best way to get both a diverse class and a high-quality class academically.
So what are some of those specific race-neutral admissions practices that they're talking about here?
So there are some that UNC Chapel Hill already employs. They have the Carolina Covenant Program. It's a financial aid program that helps eligible students from low-income families graduate without debt. So they get a diverse financial aid package that helps them out. They have a transfer program for students coming in from community colleges. They have the Carolina College Advising Corps. So that recruits students from underrepresented high schools around the state, or underserved high schools. Those are some of the things they currently use. There are some other options out there, other race-neutral options that they say they've looked at. For example, at University of Texas Austin, that school admits everyone who's in the top 10% of a high school in the state. But UNC Chapel Hill said that they looked at it and found that that would actually hurt the academic quality, that the test scores and the GPA rankings would go down if they took up that practice.
Let's go back to this quota question. It's kind of interesting. UNC Chapel Hill says we don't have quotas. And the SFAA says, well, you don't have them on the books, but there's a kind of de facto quota. Look at these numbers. Do you know, there have been a number of court cases, and it's fairly complicated if you look back at the history, but have the courts ruled on whether or not, you know, that's admissible? To what extent does that kind of evidence look at the numbers, whether or not you call it a quota, whether or not that's relevant to deciding a case like this?
So on paper, racial quotas are not legal, but this attorney for Students for Fair Admissions argued in his opening statements yesterday that UNC Chapel Hill has de facto quotas, which he didn't go into this too much, but what I think they're trying to say in their arguments with their witnesses is that if you look at the data, there's a certain percentage range of Black and Hispanic students that are admitted every year, and that they're being held to a different standard in order to achieve those numbers.
Now, UNC Chapel Hill again says it does consider race in admitting, quote, underrepresented minorities. What groups are included in that group?
So underrepresented minorities, it's kind of a catchphrase in higher ed, and it encompasses Black, Hispanic, and Native American students. So Asian Americans, for example, while they're a minority in this country, they are not underrepresented in higher education. So if you actually look at the 2020 class at UNC Chapel Hill, it's about 8% Black, almost 9% Latino, less than 0.5% Native American, and it's close to 60% white and 11% Asian. If you compare that to the population of North Carolina, the racial categories that are disproportionately represented are Blacks and Asians. So Black students are underrepresented in that number, and Asian students are overrepresented in that number. But of course, it also includes international students and out-of-state students.
Right. And as we've said, there have been a number of these cases. SFAA has brought a similar case against the University of Texas, Austin, and Harvard. What is distinct about the UNC Chapel Hill case?
There are a lot of similarities in these three cases. I think maybe the most differences are between the Harvard case and UNC Chapel Hill. In the Harvard case, charged that Asian Americans were specifically discriminated against. They argued, for example, that admissions officers had rated Asian Americans lower for personal qualities, which is a subjective category. Harvard's also just kind of a different animal. It's much more selective. Its private legacy admissions play a greater role, and its admissions practices aren't subject to state law the way that UNC Chapel Hill or UT Austin's are as public universities.
When
In the University of Texas Austin case, the plaintiff was a rejected student, a white student named Abigail Fisher. And Texas had passed this law requiring admission of students in the top 10% of their class. That made admissions for the lower-ranked students even more competitive. And so UT Austin started to take race into account just for those students. But I think, when considering the differences in all these cases, Students for Fair Admissions is arguing the burden of proof is really just on the university to show that they're meeting the Supreme Court standards. And one of the biggest differences between those cases before and now is that the Supreme Court looks different now since the case against University of Texas Austin went to the Supreme Court.
And this isn't in the Supreme Court yet, but one anticipates that whatever the outcome in this particular case in this trial in Winston-Salem, likely to go to the Supreme Court ultimately.
Well, I don't know if I would say it's likely, but it is at least possible that between this case and the Harvard case that is still on appeal, and the fact that SFFA just refiled another case against UT Austin, it's possible that one of these cases is just going to push the issue of affirmative action up to the Supreme Court. So I can't say which one or that it's going to happen, but it's at least possible.
Now let's talk about this particular trial. One of the key witnesses for the plaintiff in this case is a Duke University economics professor. What's his role here?
Yeah, so Peter Arcidiacono, he is an economist. He analyzed UNC's admissions data over a number of years to try to quantify the preference that UNC gives to underrepresented minorities. He argues that white and Asian American applicants' chances of being accepted to UNC would significantly increase if they were African American or Hispanic, if you hold their other variables, other characteristics constant. So he created an index for students based on their academic scores, basically their grades plus their SAT scores. And he found students, at the highest percentile on that index, they're practically all admitted, but less than 1% of African American applicants were in that top range. So his analysis found that Black and Hispanic applicants were admitted at higher rates compared to other students in the same academic percentile based just on their grades and test scores.
Now, you certainly expect experts like that to be testifying in a case like this, but UNC Chapel Hill students and alumni were granted status as defendant interveners in this case. They're going to be able to testify. So, what kind of anecdotes did they provide?
These students, they sought to intervene, which means that they sought to be a party to the case. And the judge allowed it, but only for a limited purpose. So what they're there to show is that, one, the history of segregation and discrimination at UNC and in North Carolina to show that historical significance. They're also there to show the effect of the current admissions practices that UNC uses, as well as SFFA's proposed practices, how those would play out, what effect it would have on the sort of critical mass of diverse students and on their experience. So these interveners, these students, or maybe recent alumni, they're a diverse group. They include many first and second generation immigrants and Black students. And just in the opening arguments, their attorney talked about stories that they had about feeling tokenized or stereotyped on campus, feeling excluded. They talk about the importance of diversity and inclusiveness and the value of having more students like them from underrepresented backgrounds. So their ultimate argument is that the work of affirmative action isn't done yet, that affirmative action is necessary for classes to be diverse and for these students from underrepresented groups to feel comfortable and included and be successful as students.
All right. In the 20 seconds I've given you, Liz, what's the expected timeline here? When does the trial end and when might we expect a decision?
Well, it's a 2-week trial, so it ends at the end of next week, but it could be any time after that when we'll actually get an opinion. And then after that, I think it's likely to be appealed, as Students for Fair Admissions have appealed their other cases in the past.
Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter. Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
We've got links to her reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. And that's our show for today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.